And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's 4 minutes past nine on Friday the 26th of April 2024. And you're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here on Highland Radio. And we're with you for the next 3 hours. Our first hour is dedicated to our Friday panel and we've a range of topics to discuss. We want you involved in that conversation as well, and you always keep us really busy on the lines. The WhatsApps and texts, the number doesn't change. It's 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. You can send voice notes to the WhatsApp on that number as well. If you wish to give us a call, it's 07491 25000, and emails to comments at highlandradio.com. And just to remind you early on, if you wish to watch the show, you can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland on YouTube. We're on Facebook as well, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport, and across the X platform. Okay, right, that's the housework done. Let's say good morning to our guests, Independent Deputy Mark McSharry. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
No, it's great to have you on the show. And we can also say a very good morning to Dr. Michelle Maher, Programme Manager of See Her Elected. Good morning to you, Michelle. Thanks for your time today.
No problem at all, Greg. Delighted to be here.
And we'll also be joined shortly by Damien Dowds, who's editor of the Inishowen Independent. But just starting, if it's okay, with a story that is leading the news this morning. Taoiseach Simon Harris is amongst those condemning attacks on Gardaí during a protest at a site earmarked to accommodate international protection applicants in County Wicklow. This happened last night. Mr. Harris said Gardaí are charged with upholding the laws of the land and they should be supported in doing so. Well, for the past 6 weeks, protests have been held at the site known as Trotter House or River Lodge, which has been earmarked to accommodate, as I mentioned, international protection applicants. Gardaí claim, they come under fire, after workers were brought onto the site. Gardaí then, later on, as things escalated, charged with shields, riot shields, using pepper spray as well. Deputy Mark McSharry, what do you make of these scenes? It's terribly unsavoury, but I don't know, there's just something about seeing the Gardaí charge at, members of the state with riot shields and pepper spray. I know the argument is that for very good reason, but it just is, it just seems very strange, if that's the right word, to watch.
Yeah, well, look, first of all, I totally support peaceful protest. It's a very important part of our life, our society. I'm not aware of the details. I've heard the news reports this morning. I agree with you. Of course, it's unsavoury and we don't like the idea of the Gardaí having to take a heavy hand. But I wasn't there, so I don't know. And we can't have the Gardaí afraid to do their job. I mean, I know I have very strong views on the subject matter of the protest, but would not support either abuse of Gardaí or any vandalism, wanton vandalism, as we've seen in some instances around some of these protests. So it's regrettable. I don't like the idea of it any more than you, but I wasn't there, so I won't cast judgment.
Yeah, but how do we deal with these situations going forward? Because it seems to be over months and years perhaps now, you know, that locals very strongly object to something happening in their area. They obviously feel they're not being listened to. The government says these are our plans, we're going to continue with them. And then down the line, we end up with these sort of situations. I just wonder, are these going to become more frequent in nature, or do we need to be doing something to be engaging more with communities? I don't know, because there's, 4 or 5 major IPAS centres due to be dotted around the country. So it's not like this is a once-off, we'll not see it again.
It's not a question of, wanting to see more or will we see more. I mean, the subject matter of these protests is obviously the government's approach to immigration, which for over 2 years I've been highlighting. I've transitioned from being a total right-wing racist, apparently, in current media, obviously excluded yourself, Craig, and Highland, who gave a platform to it from the beginning, and most local radio did. But the national approach to immigration has been shambolic. It has been non-strategic. And I think that the Minister for Justice's appearance at the Joint Oireachtas Committee on the subject matter during the week just showed how totally detached the executive are from doing executive work.
Well, on that matter, we're going to speak more specifically on that because, quite remarkably, I was going to raise that issue today and I can't find any reporting of it at all, bar one online media outlet. That appearance, the video's gone viral. Everyone's seen it in the country, or most people have, yet it has not been reported. So I might come to that more specifically, if that's okay. In a moment, Dr. Michelle Maher, in relation to, as I say, you know, we weren't there. I've seen some videos. I've seen the reports of it. All I know is, obviously, you know, these guards could be our sons and daughters, brothers and sisters. You certainly don't want to see them in that situation. They've been sent into that situation. But also to see, you know, citizens, I mean, some might have been involved in stone throwing and what have you, but being charged with riot shields, it's just really an unpleasant situation. Again, probably the wrong word.
It is. It's very disturbing and it's very scary. But I think it's right that we don't forget that the heart of all of this talk about refugees are people who have a right to seek protection, and they're somebody's sons as well. And Ireland has an obligation to consider applications for international protection under the UN conventions relating to the status of refugees. So, there's real people in desperate situations who are at the heart of this, with all of this discourse and all of this action and all of this protest swirling around them. And I agree with Deputy McSharry that, you know, everyone has a right to peaceful protest, as part of living in a democracy. But I think people arriving in wealthier nations like ourselves, I think that's going to be a fact of life that we need to do something about. And I think climate change is going to drive that as well. I think refugees that are moving because of climate change.
I think, Michelle, with respect, sort of this is where I think the public now start going, right, they lean forward a little bit with your last comment, because they will also say, right, I take what you're saying, but there are also people in this country in desperate situations. And when you talk about Ireland being a rich country, right?
Yeah.
Again, what kind of, I think, annoys people is that richness, that wealth is not trickling down. And it's very hard then not to just think of your own self or your own situation. And I think I get what you're saying, and everything you're saying is factually true. But then it begins, I think, for a lot of people living everyday life, it begins to grate a little.
Yeah. I understand that, and I respect people who feel that pain themselves and look around and think, well, what about us? And this is where I really would have to ask the government to have a long, hard look at themselves. I don't see a plan. You know, I see everything, as far as I can see, is being left to Roderick O'Gorman, and I don't see other government departments rowing in behind him in any great way. And I really don't understand that. It is a major issue, if not the major issue, in the country at the moment. The response that we're seeing from the government is it's ad hoc, it's woeful, and then that creates a vacuum which we know can be exploited. And you know, why isn't this being treated like a national emergency? Because I think it is a national emergency if we see scenes like we saw last night in Wicklow. And it has so many different moving parts to it. I mean, we have an Office of Emergency Planning in the Department of Defence. We even have something, I looked it up last night, it's called the Strategic Emergency Management Structure. And when a national response is needed to a national emergency, all government agencies and department responses are mapped out and managed centrally. There is a plan that falls into place if there's a national emergency. We're years into a Ukrainian war. I don't know if Palestinian people are going to find themselves similarly scattered. You know, there's a threat to our security from people taking the law into their own hands and even feeling that they have to take the law into their own hands. If that's not a national emergency, I don't know what is. So, you know, show me the plan.
Damien Dowds is the editor of the Inishowen Independent newspaper and with us as well. Damien, we're reflecting on the scenes out of Wicklow last night. There's been condemnation from the likes of Minister McEntee and Simon Harris, a Gardaí come under attack by, according to the reports, and then obviously dealt with. But if you see the scenes, they're going around this town with riot shields, and it's like something you'd expect to see somewhere else. But here it is, right in our doorstep. What do you make of the situation? And you're just muted at the moment, Damien.
Sorry, there we go. Unmuted, Craig. For once. Look, I only heard about the Newton and Candy stuff this morning, and I just got a quick gander at one video there on social media. I suppose this is probably fairly inevitable in the way that some of these protests are coming from local people, but then hangers-on will come and visit it, and they are coming looking to cause some aggro, not unlike the riots in Dublin on the back of November. So when the opportunity arises, bad actors, if that's what they can be called, will come along and will see if they can cause some aggro and get the scenes that they managed to provoke last night. You know, the protests and the peaceful protests, there's clearly a, you know, those are part of a well-functioning democracy, which we have. But the policing response last night, I'm sure, was proportionate to it. Like, even though they
talk of a peaceful protest, but the protest protesters couldn't peacefully stand at the front gates of this property. They were forcibly moved by the Gardaí. That still falls in your mind under the right to peaceful process. Protest, I beg your pardon.
Actually, I I've seen one video of it this morning, Greg. I heard it talked about in the radio, so I didn't see the ins and outs.
No, that's
I haven't
okay,
seen
yeah.
a campaign map of how this protest was moved about. But I suppose very often you could be standing somewhere, Greg, and you know, we report the local district courts regularly, and the guards tell people to move off all the time. They tell you to move off if you're standing outside a chipper, outside a nightclub. They'll tell you to move off for a variety of reasons all the time. And you generally have to comply. And many of the person has found themselves before the district court because they didn't comply with the guards, and the guards asked them to move off. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, you don't have the right to stand permanently wherever it is that you choose once the guards tell you to move off. For whatever reason, the guard had to do it. And the guards had to do it.
Okay, as I say, we're all just sort of digesting that news as it emerged overnight. But something we referenced a little earlier on, or Deputy McSherry referenced a little earlier on, and that's Minister of Justice Helen McEntee. She faced criticism after being unable, it would seem, to give clear answers to independent Clare TD Michael McNamara. He was questioning her regarding the take-back system for asylum seekers. In an exchange this week, it's gone viral on social media. I haven't seen it really covered in any mainstream media as such. During the exchange, commentators seemed to feel the minister didn't understand some of the more basic questions, while other questions she did understand wasn't able to give clear answers, as she didn't have the facts to hand. But the minister insists that signing to the EU Migration Pact will benefit Ireland. Deputy McSherry, should we expect more knowledge from our senior politicians on crucial matters? I suppose if you're trying to argue why a new pact, the EU Migration Pact, will work for Ireland and will benefit Ireland, I think you really should be, or should you, many people might feel, should be fully across the current system and the flaws and the facts and the figures.
I agree 100% with you there, Greg. That was probably the worst performance I saw by a senior cabinet minister at an Oireachtas committee in my 22 years. But it did epitomise for me the hands-off, non-executive approach being taken by government. I mean, we decided headlong, we are taking as many as are prepared to come. And I mean, you know, Dr. Maher is correct, of course. There's nobody in Ireland that wouldn't like to extend our assistance to people in line with our capacity, but there was no consideration given to that latter point, capacity, nor is there any consideration being given to, and Dr. Maher rightly described this as an emergency. It is. We've had a housing emergency in Ireland for 10 years, and we have yet to treat it as an emergency. So the non-executive nature of the executive, being our senior ministers, is one of the major problems here.
What do you mean by that? Do you mean when you talk about, are you saying they're simply not doing their job, they're leaving it to other people? What do you mean by that?
Exactly that, yes. The executive are elected to take decisions, to hold control, but they don't. Everything is responsibility of somebody else. The most regular answer to any question in Leinster House, I want to thank the deputy for this most important question. I share the deputy's concern. But as the deputy knows, this is a matter for anybody but me, whether it's the HSE or whether it's the Department of Justice or whether it's whatever else. So increasingly, our government ministers from all parties and none through several administrations, particularly in my view since 2004, 2004 Health Act was a sort of a watershed moment where the health service was subcontracted out to this other conglomerate known as the HSE. And increasingly then government ministers since have become commentators on crises rather than the instruments of solutions. And that's one of our major problems. In terms of the pact that you referred to, I think Europe are 20 years behind the curve in terms of taking a strategic and coordinated approach to an immigration crisis, which is worldwide. 2.5 billion people want to migrate. Naturally, they're going to focus on countries they perceive to be wealthier. But in Ireland, we have increased our population by 3% in the last 18 months. And that's against a backdrop of the biggest accommodation crisis for homegrown people, not just Irish, people of all nationalities who live, work and study here. And you very kindly, Greg, and Highland and local radio in general have been very good at amplifying this situation. But in the main, there isn't a word about it in the national media.
The process is simply for people to have a conversation, and it's from both sides as well. I think the problem we seem to be having in this country is that we aren't conversing on things. If it goes,
no, you're not allowed. People, and I would say this will manifest itself with the local elections, where people are going to feel confident in what they wish to say at their own doorstep, because people are attacked, labelled, named, and harassed. No matter what their view is on whatever issue, because we're in a world now, particularly here in Ireland, where the mainstream or the establishment, for want of a better expression, are standing by looking to pounce on every possible opportunity to manufacture outrage. And you alluded to the minister's performance at the committee not really being in the national media. And that's no surprise. I mean, you know, when we were raising the issues of the lack of a strategic approach to immigration on your show and other shows over the last 2 years, the mainstream stayed away with it. Why? Because the primary sources for the mainstream national publications and broadcasters are Taoiseach, TDs, Taoiseach, ministers, secretary generals, agency chiefs. So they won't bite the hand that feeds them. There's an article by in the Irish Times today about 12 senior journalists working in the current government. The author outlines the fact that this looks incestuous and breeds, an uncomfortable reality of the closeness between. I mean, and given the level of dysfunctionality and the lack of that executive authority and decision-making accountability that's required by the people that we elect, we hope that senior journalism steps in to be that watchdog. Unfortunately, we're in the storm where they're all in the same trap.
Damien, a lot to digest there, and of course, coming at this as the editor of a very popular newspaper, I suppose, firstly to what appeared to be Minister McEntee. I mean, she knew surely if she's going up against the likes of Michael McNamara that his questioning was going to be forensic and he was going to dig deep on some of this stuff. But at times she looked like she didn't have really, some of the basic information to hand. And the government may well have all of the answers to these questions, by the way. It's just that they weren't delivered. I'm not saying that I'm not trying to make out that the government hasn't got a handle on this. That's not for me to say, but just the answers weren't delivered. And then I suppose then on to really maybe some of the coverage of these matters being somewhat absent, it would seem.
Yeah, well, I think after the election or the appointment of Simon Harris as Taoiseach, or in the run up to that, there's a lot of talk about Helen McEntee being, in line for perhaps being moved. And there was a very effective lobbying on her behalf, kite flying, whatever you want to call it, through the national press, saying that if we move Helen McEntee now, that would just be given in to the right wingers that had the protests or the riots last November. I think her performance at the Oireachtas committee shows that she isn't really on top of her brief, and it can't the Minister of Justice today needs to be able to give the basic answers to the basic questions that will be coming from the TD. Mark McSherry's been in the Oireachtas an awful long time, and I'll take his word on it when he says it's the worst performance he's seen from a minister in 20 and more years in front of a Oireachtas committee. So she wasn't on top of a brief, not able to give simple questions or answers to simple questions. And that's probably, you know, I don't know if the Taoiseach is reflecting on that today, having given her the backing, having allowed her to stay in that position of Minister for Justice, even though there was moves or suggestions that she should be ousted. He might have time to consider and to regret on that today. And look, the only story that I've seen in the national press that's come out of the Oireachtas committee meeting is the story regarding the fact that something like 80% of asylum applicants to the Republic are now coming over the border from the north. And they're in a bit of a panic without the common travel area, obviously, between Britain and Ireland allows for free movement of people, regardless of their nationality on that. And, you know, Ireland having made such a big play through Brexit to ensure that the border would stay open is now in a wee bit of a sticky wicket there. Like, so I suppose that back door that between the North and between the Republic where asylum applicants are coming from, and Britain being outside of these different European migration pacts and so on, and Britain continuing to have its problems with immigrants crossing the French Channel or the English Channel to get into it, it probably leaves that as quite a difficult situation for us. So while we can take a look at the minister's poor performance, it's always enjoyable to see a minister kind of squirming, there's probably some substantive stuff there as well.
There is too,
but here along the border,
they're struggling already with public support for the EU migration pact. But I think it's difficult for any person to sort of argue why something is good when they can't really discuss in detail the system it is to replace. And the public now are very switched on. They know what's what, and they see that, and it's a red flag for them. Michelle, do you know, like, I've spoke quite highly of the minister in the past. I think she's done amazing work in terms of, you know, or very good work, sorry, in terms of violence against women, domestic violence, you know, people being blackmailed online, that type of stuff. So, to be honest, somewhat disappointed, if that makes sense, that she performed so poorly on this critical matter here, because it's going to overshadow what I think is quite a lot of good work that this minister has done.
I agree when it comes to moving legislation that affects families, affects women, affects gender-based violence, and I've heard her talk and be right across the detail of quite a lot of all of that. I think it was very regrettable that a government minister was exposed as not being across the detail of something that has so many of us worried. And I'm just stuck on this point that it's just comes from this lack of an all government response. You know, there's no coherence. There's no.
Why is that, Michelle? Though, like, I mean, obviously, it seems the obvious thing to do. Even a minister with specific responsibility, as you say, it's like it's no one else's responsibility except Roderick O'Gorman's and more latterly Minister McEntee. So where is the resistance to sort of we as a three-party government, this is our approach going forward?
I think there's always a tension between perhaps having to make unpopular decisions or tackle social issues where there is division among the electorate and the election cycle. And I think that is what I think that nobody seems to be, you know, taking this by the scruff of the neck and saying, right, here's the plan, this is what we're going to do.
But there's no popular answer to that. Is that what you're saying?
And I think so.
Because let's not forget the EU Migration Pact was ticking along for years. And as we approach the European elections, I'm open to correction on this, it seemed to move very, very quickly. So that you're saying, because we are in the mouth of a couple of elections now, the people who are seeking election, they're probably trying to avoid talking about this because it's such a difficult one. That doesn't say it. That's not great, is it, for democracy and what have you? And it's not really great, I suppose, maybe for other candidates that, you know, might get swallowed up trying to highlight other issues because they're going to be asked, well, what's your views on migration?
I'm not 100% sure about what the what the protests are about. You know, is it capacity? There's too many of us in Ireland. Is it anger at other public service areas? You know, we're annoyed about, you know, how long it takes to get an appointment with a doctor. You know, our kids are still living with us, you know, so and we're conflating different policy areas all into immigration.
I think there's reality.
Or is it around safety
sphere?
For women? You well, know, that, I don't know.
Well, that's there's a lot of women are protesting. There's a lot of women are protesting down the country. In the
there
area
is a lot of women protesting down the country, including in the town I live in and myself. You know, and I was told that the protest was protecting the people, the women, and the children in the town from military-aged single black men, and you know. But those same people aren't protesting about, you know, the greatest threat to women and her children in this country comes from the men we live with. You know, one in four of us as women who've been in a relationship have been abused by a partner or an ex-partner. You know, the Gardaí took 54,000 calls about domestic abuse in 2023. You know, where's the protest about that if your driving concern is safety for women?
Mark, do you want to come in on that?
I mean, people protest for a variety of reasons. One thing is undeniable, and that is that we have taken a headless chicken approach to immigration. In this, we've done it against a backdrop where a lot of people here are struggling. We still continue to pay, for example, €230 per week to the people who had arrived, 100,000 of them or so from the Ukraine, without any background checks of any description. But if you were a refugee coming from Syria or Somalia, you get €38 per week. I had a parliamentary question answered yesterday asking, when were we going to level the playing field and bring it back to €38? And the answer, in effect, is that there's no plans to
but
do
for
it.
For new arrivals, it's €38 from Ukraine.
Yeah, new arrivals. Obviously, since the money dropped to €38, new arrivals has totally plummeted. That's in terms of the Ukrainians, okay? So what people want, I think, is a government that are operating with a policy that's representative of their views, that emanates from the ground up, and that they listen to people, rather than one that seems, on the surface at least, to be about ingratiating senior personnel to other world leaders as statespeople. This isn't a new issue. It's going on forever. The amount of hotels and bed and breakfasts in the entire Northwest that are taken up with this because of very, very lucrative contracts, which, by the way, are not replicated when it comes to seeking to house people based and living here, or the 2,000 people on the Donegal housing list, for example. And these are the frustrations that are rising for everybody.
I don't think hotels and B&Bs, though, are the solution to the ongoing.
Neither do I. But this shows the stupidity and lack of strategic approach by saying, yeah, send them in and we will hoover up all the accommodation we can find, whether it's hotels. And tourism in our part of the country, particularly Donegal, Sligo, Leitrim and so on, has suffered as a result.
And Kerry.
Tourism numbers because of this.
Damien, just to Michelle's points there, I mean, why is it up to the likes of Michelle and others to talk about, you know, the fears that people have and maybe even, you know, pointing out as Michelle did, I feel like I'm not talking about you, Michelle, just come in at any point. But I just think it's quite interesting, Damien, that, you know, should there not be a department within the government or someone within government to you know, dispel fear? A lot of this is about fear. A lot of it's about the unknown. You know, you can look at CSO stats on crime. There hasn't been any massive peaks. You can speak to Gardaí. There haven't been any massive peaks in, you know, crime around Donegal where refugees, asylum seekers have gone. Obviously, you'll get 10 cases of an Irish person in inverted commas in a newspaper, and then there's one person with a foreign name, and that's the article that shared, and look what's happening to our country and all that kind of stuff. But why is it up to the likes of Michelle and others to sort of, you know, counter the information that's out there, or try and allay fears, or talk to the public or community?
I think, you know, and we've tried a wee bit of this as well, just even in local reporting. Like, so it depends. Like, the people who are leading the anti-immigration protests, a lot of them are quite cynical. And will use and manipulate data and figures in a way that suits them. So even when you point out to them their ways, they don't want to hear it. For example, there was protests in Bulcrana here late last year, and I spoke to some very concerned, a very concerned mother, and she was pointing out that there was a lack of school places. In primary school level, my children go to primary school here in Bulcrana, and I was pointing out to her, and the facts are fairly easily available. There's one school in particular, Scullyskin, which is about to undergo a major rebuild, that did curtail the number of pupils that could go there, but that's the only one. There's seven schools in the Bulcrana parish, all of whom have fewer students in it than they did have 10 years ago because of the way the demographics has gone. There was no shortage of school places. And I had that conversation with one of the people that was leading the protests here and just entirely refused to accept the facts. So they will not be changed in what it is they're thinking. And they are the ones then who are, in many cases, some cases, quite cynically leading and spreading that information to others.
Well, you would know that's about schools, and we've conversed about this before, though. You would know there's great challenges in getting a GP's appointment in and around Inishowen. I know you said you haven't had issues in the past, but, you know, there are people being told that there's no appointments till, you know, the middle of May. And what have you. I mean, I don't think people necessarily have to extreme views to note that access to basic healthcare has been seriously curtailed because of a massive increase in the local population.
I don't know that it's been seriously curtailed, Greg. Like, occasionally there may be a delay in getting a GP's appointment. I can just speak for myself, my own family, my wider family circle, this circle of people I work with. None of us have actually experienced these fabled GP appointment delays as yet, anyway. But look, again, it's you know, I give you this fact, you give me another fact. And that's the way that when you're discussing with the people who are leading this opposition, and they are always at pains to say, oh, we're not racist. But it's very, very hard to help them to... it's very, very hard to change their minds. They have a fixed thing and they will select which facts suits them. And Michelle was talking about the...
I get where you're coming from, right? And you might be talking about, you know, words like racist and all that kind of stuff. But, like, I'm really talking about the people of Ireland here, not those that are politically motivated, not those that are anti this, that and the other. They're just talking of their lived everyday experience. You know, it's not born of race or whatever. It's literally access to services. It's their lived experience on a day-to-day basis, and that's probably what they want to see the government take action on.
Yeah, that may be the case for many people, but there are people, Greg, that are at the head of these protests and are the head of this. And they are cynically manipulating the information to their own ends, and then they're spreading that around the rest. Mm-hmm. So there's cynical leadership, and then there's good-hearted, ordinary people that are in there as well. And they are kind of caught up and swept along with this.
Right.
The reason, actually...
No, I was going to take a break, but I don't want you to think I'm cutting you off. That's not my intention. Okay. We'll be back in 4 minutes with more from our guests. Okay, it is Friday's 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We are in the company this morning of our panel, Deputy Mark McSharry, an independent, Damien Dowds, editor of the Inishowen Independent newspaper, Dr. Michelle Maher, programme manager of See Her Elected. All right. Lots and lots of people entering the race at both European and local level for the general elections, which are upcoming. And I suppose, too, as was referenced just slightly before the break there, there's going to be a few key issues here that maybe are going to dominate conversations, or maybe why people may or may not vote. What's your sort of take on where we're at, where we're going, Michelle?
I'm delighted to see all the extra names heading towards the ballot papers because in See Her Elected, we're responsible for some of those additional women getting election ready and being able to put together a campaign and to run in the local elections, because in See Her Elected, we support women into county councils in rural Ireland. And there's about 1,700 candidates declared already in the local elections. About 570 of them are women, which is 33% of the total. That's already more women than ran in 2019. So that's really positive. And in See Her Elected, we've trained about 40% of those that that are running. So in our first election, we're delighted to see these amazing women putting themselves forward. So in Donegal, so far there's about 15 women running. There was 17 last time round. And I'm glad to say that everyone in the county, should they choose to do so, has the opportunity now to vote for a woman, because there's a woman candidate in each of the electoral areas, unlike last time when there was a spectacular all-male lineup in the Lifford-Stranorla area. So, yeah,
I think appreciate it's you describing them as spectacular, I think.
All men are spectacular, of course. In their own way.
It is going to be an interesting campaign, Damien, and, you know, in different areas for different reasons, in the show for obvious reasons. You know, it's not just gender balance or people of different backgrounds, but of course, you know, the big issues. It is very sadly, you know, the epicenter of the defective concrete crises. But people will vote for a whole load of reasons, I'm sure, Damien.
Well, absolutely there. And just to follow on Michelle's figures there, just say, I think that we've three out of the 17 candidates who said they're going to run for the local elections, three are women, which is about half of the national rate. So that's about 17% of the three. And all three are in political parties. No female independence as yet. And obviously the gender balance quota, as far as I understand, refers only to political parties as well. But yeah, going to be a fascinating election to see how it pans out and how it goes in terms of the Mica Redress Party. In North Innishow in particular, I'd say that Ali Farn is the candidate there for the Redress Party, and he's sitting pretty strongly in that there isn't, maybe there's more declarations to come yet, but the sitting Fianna Fáil councillor, Martin McDermott, is running by himself at the moment, and he carries a very large surplus. And actually on the issue of Mica, I think Martin McDermott will, you know, most people that are involved and have defective homes have at one time or the other been in touch with Martin McDermott, because he has played a really strong game and done a really lot of hard work on behalf of constituents, not just from the North in his own electoral area, but also from the South, to assist them. Like, so he will have a surplus of maybe up towards 1,000 votes that will be looking for a home. And with geography and so on, Ali Farn is very close to Martin McDermott Centreland. So as things stand, the Mica Redress Party would have a pretty good shot at getting Ali Farn. And South Innishowen's a wee bit more competitive. Joy Beard's the Mica candidate there. Mm. And the parties have their own, you know, the parties, Sinn Féin, I think, have selected three. Fianna Fáil have selected two. There's a lot of change in South Innishowen as well. Obviously, a couple of long-term sitting councillors are retiring at the next election. But that's going to be a big issue. And immigration will be an issue as well, because there are candidates who are certainly campaigning on Stop the Immigration, Ireland is Full platform, and it'll be very interesting to see how they do come election day.
What is going to be very interesting, Mark, is really, I suppose, the campaigns and the debates, be it the European elections or the local elections, and this is no offence to local councillors or what have you, and we'll go through the motions and we'll have the debates and all that, and people will vote on what they want to vote on. But really, in terms of, you know, councillors, you know, much of the work locally is, you know, it's an executive function, isn't it? Really, what influence can that councillors have? Some might say not much. So we'll be discussing issues potentially, really, to get votes, but I think no one could put their hand up and say, yes, I'm going to make a change, because the platform simply isn't there for that. And the same at EU level. You know, we're seeing EU candidates talking about a lot of national issue stuff that Europe doesn't really have any influence on. It's going to be really interesting. I would love to try and cut through that and sort of say, right, we're only going to talk about stuff that maybe you can have some influence or impact on. But that's certainly not going to be possible. It's not going to be the norm across the country. But it is going to be an interesting little cycle, Mark, we have.
Yeah, look, I mean, politics for many is a spectator sport, and electioneering is sort of the highlight of that. In the sense that people are going to be asked all sorts of questions. The competence, as you say, I mean, for local authority members is for the discretional end of the budget within the council, which is quite a small amount. A
couple of hundred grand, I think. Well, maybe just over a million, I think it was last time around. And that was about. And the only other real function is to whether or not to vary the local property tax.
Yeah, no, the discretionary spend will be more than that in Donegal. I mean, I know Sligo's 3 million. But look, there are people's first point of call. And at least historically, they would have had a very direct line into senior government on any issue. Now, sadly, all the established parties, be it Sinn Féin, be it my own former Fianna Fáil, be it Fine Gael or whatever, treat their local authority members largely with contempt. Tell them how things are. This is what we're doing in Tough. So all they have is people's phone numbers, but can affect little change. That's nothing to do with the lack of effort from local authority members. And I think they're vitally important. But I think there has been a dilution of our democracy over the course of the last 25 years in particular, where public representatives generally are being replaced by a practice, a much abused word, where, you know, that's a matter for so-and-so rather than us. And I alluded to it earlier in a government sense. But I think, look, it's an important time. Predominantly, people will vote on local issues, particularly in constituencies here in the Northwest. You know, there's probably, they always talk about swing states in America. You know, we probably have three in Ireland, you know, Dunleary, Dublin South, and Dublin South Central, you know, are the ones that probably just float with, you know, a national view. I mean, it's very much going to be about MICA in certain parts of Dublin. It'll be about attitudes to immigration and very much local issues. I mean, that will affect, you know, different town lands, different parishes where there are outstanding issues to be dealt with.
Yeah, and I don't either want to do, I'm kind of arguing with myself here, but some people would say that's no great surprise. But Michelle, you know, we can't underestimate too the impact, maybe not immediately, but in time, that a more diverse, more representative local authority might have. We can't just put our hands up and say it's all done and dusted. You know, they've got no influence whatsoever. You know, it does play, as I say, I'm arguing with myself, but there is an important role to play there. And it would be interesting to see, you know, a more reflective local authority, the direction it went.
I strongly believe that, you know, the more diversity that you have in a county council, it can only improve the decision making that happens there. Yes, our local authorities, comparatively speaking, don't have as much power as, say, councils elsewhere in Europe. A lot of the power is still held nationally in government departments. But, you know, there's big budgets at county councils, and they do make decisions that affect us on everything we encounter when we open our front door in the morning. So I would like my county councillors to look like the people outside the window of the council chamber, because I think the value in that knowledge, that diversity of knowledge, myself and Mark and Damien probably have three very different experiences of what it's like to live in the Northwest. So we would have three very different points of view that would inform decision making in councils. But just wanted to kind of pick you up on one wee thing you said there, Greg, where you're talking about, you know, the media, that maybe it's not possible to keep MEPs, you know, from talking about things that they don't have any power over. I kind of have to challenge you on that. I think the job of the media is, if someone's running for Europe, as a base, if we've already talked about Helen McEntee not being across the detail, if someone's running for Europe, they should bloody well know what an MEP's job is. And likewise,
no, of
county
course
councillor.
No, of course. And maybe I wasn't clear enough. And even if I was clear enough, I love criticism, because every day is a learning day. But if you have MEPs, their platform is, you know, it's disgraceful housing, you know, the cost of living, and these type of things. If the truth be told, they go over to Europe, and those aren't, that's a national issue.
Absolutely.
They're national issues,
yeah.
Right? Maybe European candidates should be forced in debates to actually discuss European matters. You know, who will they align themselves with over there? How will they vote on certain matters? That's the point I was trying to make, probably quite clumsily, as it turns out.
I take back that criticism.
Did I get out of it?
You defended yourself very eloquently.
Did I get out
there?
Of it? All right, that's okay. Come here, one more quick break. Back with more. I suppose really just 30 seconds on the last, or 30 seconds to a minute on the last topic. Penalty points should be immediately doubled to combat the rising death toll on our roads. A victims advocacy group has said the Irish Road Victims Association believes that drivers are not listening to the current warnings. So the basic question, Michelle Maher, would you endorse the doubling of penalty points?
I think we listen to people like the Park Road Safety Group. They have direct lived experience and a heartbreaking reason for studying the law and making recommendations. They have knowledge that is valuable. So if they're calling for a change in the legislation, a change in penalty points. If they say the current system isn't working, I say we listen to them. And while I'm at it, stop flicking the lights when there's a traffic measurement van coming.
Mm. Indeed.
I don't think that's helping either.
No, well, it's slowing people down, but I take your point. Mm. Damien Dowd's doubling the points. You're muted, Damien. I might give you 3 penalty points if you do that again. No? So I'll let Mark in first.
You have Damien, to turn the phone off, Greg, when you're driving the car these days. But look, yeah, absolutely. Anything that gets drivers more concentrated, there's just driver behaviour is at the centre of a lot of the fatalities that we have on the road and a lot of the collisions that we have on the road. And unfortunately, when a lot of these collisions happen, you know, they're represented as though they were an act of God. So anything that changes the driver behaviour is there. And I know there was a lot of kind of derision thrown at Drew Harris when he said that there should be more visible Gardaic checkpoints. I think that would probably be at least as effective as doubling the points.
I think that's more effective, because then we could start having the debate about how many are, you know, hidden speed vans, fish in the barrel type of situations. Well, but, you know,
those guarded checkpoints as well, like, you know, they're for half an hour. But as Michelle says, like, you know, no sooner is a guarded checkpoint set up than on different social media groups, the location of that's been shared. So those half-hour checkpoints are probably optimum now, over the time the word percolates, right?
Well, Shari, we're in sort of yes and no territory, if you don't mind. Doubling of penalty points, do you think that would make a difference? Would you back it?
No, more visibility. More visibility.
Right, okay. I could have guessed that. Mark McSharry, Deputy Mark McSharry, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it greatly.
Thank you indeed.
Bye-bye. Take care of yourself. Damien Dowd, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Dr. Michelle Maher, thank you very much for your time. Have a wonderful weekend, will you?
You too, Greg. Thank
Bye-bye.
You very much.
Take care. We'll be back with more after the news and obituary notices.